On Cool 103.9, it is my pleasure to introduce right now, I think, one of the icons of pop culture of our era, Mr. Tommy Smothers. Thanks for joining us, Tommy.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
You have been performing with your brother for, what, 50 years more?
Yeah, we're in our 51st year now.
Wow, that's incredible. What would you say during your career was your big, big break?
Well, the first really big break that made a huge difference to us was the Tonight Show with Jack Parr back in 1961. And we were working the Purple Angel opening act for someone, and they came in and said, "Would you like to do the Tonight Show?" And we said, "Oh, yeah." We went down and auditioned, and they said, "Well, maybe next time." And then someone fell through, and they put us on, and Jack Parr is very gracious and chatted with us and stuff. And, I mean, back in those old days, when you did a Tonight Show, because there was only one at the time, mm-hmm. you were just, we couldn't go anywhere after that. After that show, and we did 13 of his last 6 months on the air.
Wow!
So it made the difference of us catching on right away, and then everything else happened from there. So that was the biggest break, and I guess in hindsight, this kind of seems strange to say, but being fired in 1969, we started in 69, and we went 10 years, and 69 getting fired was a tragedy for us, but. It turned out to be one of the gifts and surprises. It extended our career. We were off the air for a while and out of people's not being in there all the time. And it turned out to be we got a lot of residual respect after, you know, it took about 10 years for people to say, "Hey, that's pretty cool. You guys stood up and said what you wanted to say and didn't back down." And then 40 years later, I got the Emmy for it.
Yeah, that just happened this year, didn't it?
Yeah, that was out of the blue. I was conflicted about doing it at that uh-huh. time. Said, "What am I going to say? I'm just going to go up there." And say, "Thank you very much." And so I anguished over the little speech I gave, but I thought it turned out well.
Wow. Now, you do have some ties to Utah, if I'm not mistaken. You and your brother spent some time here earlier in your life?
No, it was actually in Colorado.
In Colorado?
So yeah, our parents were married in Utah.
Oh, they were. Okay. So yeah, you're familiar.
Yeah. And we played there a lot. Colorado was our first earlier dates in Aspen. We worked there in a little place with Judy Collins, our first duet. Mm. That was in early 60s, and somewhere in mid-60s. And we started our comedy duo, singing and stuff, and I picked up some songs from Judy. Judy Collins was a very, very sincere folk singer, and we had, whenever we'd have a hootenanny, everybody come over after a show and sit around and play guitars and swap songs and stuff. And she always sang every chorus of every song all the way through. We'd all play with her and stuff. And so pretty soon I started going, "Hangman, hangman, slack your rope."
I remember that routine. That was very funny. Hey, you also did a routine earlier that dealt with a situation that actually occurred here in northern Utah, the drive into the Golden Spike in Promontory Point, Utah.
Oh, yeah.
In Box Elder County. And, you know, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee myself, but I mm-hmm. tell you what, that was one of my favorite routines you guys ever did. And
that was boil that cabbage down.
Right. That was just funny.
Railroad worker, we said promissory note, Utah.
Yeah. That was just hilarious.
Oh, we had a great, we've had a great career. We're nearing the end of it now, and time for other people, but we're still having fun. And someone said, "You've been doing it 50 years. How long are you going to do this?" I said, "We'll keep performing until our fans can't get their walkers up the stairs."
Well, I'm joining those fans with those walkers, I'll tell you. Now, your brother, Dickie Smothers, is still one of the best straight men I've ever seen as part of a comedy duo. I've heard you actually talk about your brother, Dickie. Tommy, why don't you tell us a little bit about how talented Dick Smothers is and what an integral part of that show he is.
Well, you know, I didn't realize how important he was, because I kind of do most of the writing and stuff, and kind of drove the show. But it was in the 70s, we were doing a Broadway show, I Love My Wife. It was a musical comedy, and we did 2 years of a national tour. And during that first year, now I was watching a lot of daytime television, and I was watching Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy and the Black and White stuff, and I started noticing something, that the straight man did most of the talking, And I did more study on it, and I realized the straight man in early vaudeville was paid more money. The straight man was the skill position, they called it. So even Abbott and Costello, there was a 40-60 split until they got in the movies. And then I realized that if you don't believe the straight man, you won't believe the comic. So the straight man was the drummer that kept the timing going, kept it in control. And we started changing our act around from that time on. So from 80 this last 30 years.
we've
balanced it off, and we're doing some of our best work right now, because I respect the straight man so much. And I always say, if you come see the Smothers, keep an eye on Dickie. Mm-hmm. You'll see me doing stuff, but keep an eye on the straight man, because I've never seen a successful comedy team. They always had a great straight man. And, mm-hmm. and Bud Abbott was just relentless on Lou Costello. And I used to think, what would Lou Costello do without Bud Abbott? Not very much.
Right. Well,
I think that's the same thing with Dickie and I.
Now, with your career as it's going right now, how many shows a year do you still do?
Well, right now, last year is about 80. Doing 75 to 80 shows. And in the old days, we were doing 110, 125 shows. And
wow.
My goodness, it's not... we're kind of getting tired of it. We love performing, but getting to these places is so difficult now.
Mm-hmm.
And going to the airports, and it's pretty hard. But we like performing. We like being on stage. We're having a good time right now. But 70 to 80 shows is it's about 6 months. And so we have a lot of time at home. You know, 2 weeks here, a week there, 3 weeks. 4 weeks, and then we go out and we'll work pretty hard for a while. And we like working, keeping them together, because it gets our chops real sharp, you know, it gets the timing right.
Now, I know a lot of people that are listening to us right now probably saw you several years ago when you were at the Ellen Echols Theater here in Logan. But this past week, you've been in Laughlin, Nevada. I've seen you in both places, and your show is still as topical and as funny as ever. You guys are great. You're just fantastic.
Well, we don't, as far as when people leave our show, they're happy, but they always want to hear some kind of contact to verify what they feel in their hearts about fairness and being good to other people and stuff. And we do a little we don't do political stuff, but when we show the video, because when it was Logan, we didn't have a video, I don't think, and now we have this 12-minute video that kind of takes us from little kids. And it's kind of the highlights of the show 40 years ago. And it's so amazing, because that little video showing Pete Seeger singing Waist Deep in the Big Muddy and some other little things, it feels like it's today. And 40 years later, the same type of war, ongoing type of thing, and kind of ill thought out. We don't know what we're doing. And so there is we don't have to say very much in our show. But it has an attitude. When you're finished with it, you say, well, they still have an attitude there.
Uh-huh.
But it's not a preachy thing, and I think it's a good balance.
Now, on the CBS show that you had, the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, you had some of the greatest comedy writers, and these guys, a lot of them are still just at the forefront. Tell us who some of the people that wrote for you.
Well, Steve Martin, Rob Reiner, Mason Williams is still around doing stuff. Lorenzo Music, who wrote for Mary Tyler Moore and had a show. There's been some good people. Wow, that was so neat on the Emmys. Steve Martin came out and gave a very funny introduction to me. So there's some guys out there still doing. We had a lot of young writers, a lot of young people writing. We were all kind of passionate and involved. And things have gotten tighter. People used to say, don't you wish you were on television now? You could say anything you want. I said, well, hold on. There's a lot of bad language going on. You can say, you talk about sex and talk about a lot of other things and use some words that were never appropriate. But as far as social criticism or satirical, it's much more strict now.
Mm-hmm.
Because look what happened to Dixie Chicks, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Said one thing, and then the government didn't stop them. All the corporations own all the stations, said, we're not going to play them, and we don't promote their concerts, wouldn't accept thing. So it took 3 years to get us off the air. things are harder now, you know. There's an illusion of a freedom. The problem is, it's freedom of hearing.
Yeah.
You know, freedom of speech, you can say anything you want, but if there's not a mic there, or you can say, you can stand on the street corner and say anything you want. They don't care what you say. You can say it all day. It's what others might hear that people fear. So we've got to be careful and make sure that different views are held and are heard. I mean, mm-hmm. You get to hear different points of views or become kind of one-dimensional.
Now, you also were good friends with the late John Lennon, and you were did you also perform on Give Peace a Chance, too?
Yes, play guitar. That was so funny, Dave, because I think it was 1970, and the Bed In for Peace in Montreal, and they asked me if I'd like to come up there because I was kind of controversial, too, in the anti-war position. So I went up there, and they handed me a guitar, and he had these big cue cards found, all we are saying, give peace. And I was playing away, and about midway through this, he stopped the song. He said, Tom, I said, what, John? He said, Tom, I don't like what you're playing on the guitar. I was showing him my passing chords. I was playing up the neck. He said, Tom, play exactly what I'm playing. I want the two cards, the guitars doubled exactly. And there were just like three chords on it. I said, So it was my comeuppance. But I knew, ran into him on several occasions, and Harry Nilsson, I don't know if you know his music,
yeah,
he's a wonderful singer.
Oh, great.
And Harry was a great friend of John Lennon's, and we'd pal around a little bit, but they were just on a...
And didn't they get in trouble one time because they were harassing you?
Well, Harry Nilsson came to see me somewhere in the 70s, mid-70s, and I was working on a solo. I was working on material, comedy material. My brother was working on some music. So he came out to Washington, D.C., to see me. And it was the first time I'd performed in quite a while. And I did my act. It was supposed to be 45 minutes to an hour. And I was finished in 25 minutes. My timing was... And I said, is there any questions? And then it turned into just a hollering thing. And so, anyway, jump ahead 2 more months. We're opening at the Troubadour in Los Angeles, and everybody's there, Paul Newman, the stars. It's our first show in a long time. So Harry brings John Lennon there, and he says to John, he says, you know, Tom runs out of material, so he likes to be heckled. Oh, my God. It turned into just about a riot. And I got flowers the next day and stuff, but it turned darn near violent. But he was trying to help me, but they were so boozed up on brandy and all some other stuff. I don't know. But that was, he was helping me.
He was helping. Now,
yes.
Now, where does your brother Dickie live now? Does he live with you in California?
No, he lives in Sarasota, Florida. Mm-hmm. He and my sister live out there, and he has some children that live on the East Coast. So he's been there for quite a while. And I live in Sonoma, and have a small vineyard up there. And we make some wine. Dickie started the winery in 1970. So he lives in Sarasota, the west coast of Florida, and I live in the west coast of California. People said, they hate each other. They even live on the opposite coast. I said, no, we live both on the west coast. But when we get on a plane, the airline sometimes tries to put us together.
Yeah.
They say, no, I don't want to sit next to him. Dickie likes an aisle seat, and I like the window seat. But I said, I can hear him talking all the way across where the flight is. And when I get off the plane, someone will say, I just had a real nice conversation with your brother. I said, really? Did you get to say anything? He said, hardly anything.
Well, the vineyard is successful for you?
Oh, yeah. We've been since 19. It's about 40 acres. And we have a Cabernet and Merlot and some Cabernet Franc on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't produce a lot. We used to produce quite a bit of wine. But I'm raising some young children now. They're 12 and 15. They'll be 13 and 16 this April, and we've been focusing on that, and so we're mostly grape growers now and produce about a couple of hundred cases a year. We sell out of a tasting room, and the rest go to a premier winery called the Arrowwood Winery. So I live right on the line. I'm right in it. I mean, mm-hmm. There it is.
Wow.
So when something breaks, you know, my sister and I planted half the vineyard with rootstock, and And I used to drive the trucks and stuff, but I'm getting older now, and I'll have something fixed, but I won't fix it myself like I used to.
That's why you got money now, right?
No, well, I got to keep working. I want to retire. My wife said, hey, you've got two kids you got to send to college. Now, mm-hmm. I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll keep working.
Well, Tom, it has been just one of the great pleasures that I've ever had. I just cannot tell you how much you have meant to me over the years. Like when I was a child growing up in Tennessee, watching the Smothers Brothers, listening to your albums, and then getting to see you twice over the career. And
you notice the difference? It's just unreal. Yeah, Dave, you notice the difference? Tommy Smothers and their first album, oh, yeah? Mom, like, you got a dog, and I didn't have a pet. Mom, like, you didn't blow your voice. Mom liked you.
Yeah, Mom liked you best, yeah.
Yeah, now it's, I'm still a little retarded, kind of. Not retarded, but a little slow as a character. But it's a little more sophisticated. We're now in our 70s, and I'm 72. My brother's 70, and we can't argue about who Mom liked best anymore. It's a little... be strange, wouldn't it?
Well,
hey, Dave, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
It has. I am not kidding you, Tom. You, to me, you're one of the icons of the pop culture of the late 60s and 70s, and it has just been an honor to be able to talk to you today.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. A pleasure with you, too.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Okay.